Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your new title there at Arena Stage.
Hana S. Sharif, I'm the new Artistic Director of Arena Stage.
A place with an illustrious history. Before we get into, you know, how you got that gig, I guess it's probably best to move chronologically. So just sort of tell us sort of your background. Like, where do you join us from? You know, you're coming up here to D.C., but where did you grow up and you know, stake your claim to, you know, theater greatness?
Yes, well, I was raised in the great state of Texas, in Houston, Texas, but was born and went to college in Atlanta, Georgia, which was a really wonderful place to come of age as an artist. I spent most of my career on the East Coast. I was at Hartford Stage for a decade. I worked in Boston. I did 5 years in Baltimore, so in the DMV area. And then became artistic director of the Repertory Theater St. Louis in 2018, and was the first African-American woman to lead a major regional theater with that appointment. And am now here following in the great footsteps of the iconic Zelda Fish Handler and the visionary Molly Smith. It is such a joy to be artistic director here at Arena Stage. And something that feels in some ways manifested. I remember when I was 19 years old saying and writing down that one day I would be artistic director of Arena Stage. And it does feel like a gift to be able to lead this company into the next phase of its life. It is such an incredible, iconic theater that really sets the standard for new work and what a regional theater can mean and be. And so I just feel very fortunate and excited about the future.
Oh yeah, and so much I want to unpack from what you said, and I'll try to move through it chronologically in my own, just for my own brain's purposes. You said, so you grew up in Texas, and I assume you did, like, you know, high school plays and all that kind of stuff. I guess, or let me ask you, did what did you perform back, you know, as a high schooler?
Yeah. So my mom said that I was always a bit of a dramatic child. So very early, she put me in theater. I mean, I love theater. I also, though, I would say come to the art form as a writer first. So I started writing plays when I was very young, and I produced and directed my first play when I was 17 years old.
What was it?
And it was, we called it a Black Butterfly, but it was really this kind of combination of poetry and movement and monologues that I had written for my high school, and featuring students from the high school, and we performed it for the entire student body, and then we had two evening performances of it as well. And I will say that it really was a kind of transformative, catalytic moment in my life, because before I had kind of written plays and I loved, you know, being in drama and in drama class but it was the first time that I really understood what it meant to be a director and what it meant to be a producer, and it kind of blew open my idea of what might be possible in terms of a career. And then when I was in college, my sophomore year, a group of friends and I started our own theater company called Nasir Productions in Atlanta, Georgia.
What college was that in Atlanta?
I went to Spelman College. And I would say that it was one of the best decisions of my life. I am so incredibly proud to be a Spelmanite and an alumna of that illustrious institution.
Awesome. And so you say while you're there, could you say again and spell the name of the theater company that you said you and your friends started there?
Sure. We started a production company called Nasir Productions, N-A-S-I-R. And what had happened actually was that the chair of our theater department, who really was kind of a foundational figure in Spelman in the Atlanta University Center, left the department at the end of our freshman year, and the department started to go through transition. And a bunch of us were on the floor of my apartment talking about all of the work that we wanted to do, and just kind of made a decision that we could go get it, that we could create our own work, that we could learn by doing. We over pizza and soda and some folks with some beer kind of sketched out a mission statement, and And we were off, right? We were creating work that really spoke to the questions we had about the world, representations we didn't see of ourselves in the world. We also tackled classics and reinvented them. Spelman sits in the West End of Atlanta, and we felt that there were audiences that weren't being represented in the work that we saw around us. And so we decided we would create it. And those years were really, really exciting years. I served as artistic director of Nasir Productions in its kind of first iteration for six seasons. And I would say that those years are the years that really prepared me to be the leader that I am today, because when you're working in a small, scrappy theater company, you're wearing all the hats. You know, you're taking out the garbage, you're the marketing person, you're the development person, you're the director, or you're sharing those responsibilities with other artists. And so we were creating out of passion and out of writing ourselves into the world as artists and our experiences into the world. And it really did give me a 360 degree look at what it takes to really create. And I remember maybe 5 years into the work with Nasir Productions, waking up and thinking, okay, I could still be doing this 20 years from now, you know, all heart, all energy, scrappy, slowly building audiences. But I also knew that most of us were artists who came to the table. We hadn't trained as administrators. And I also knew that there was something that the multi-million dollar theaters knew that we didn't know. And I was like, I want those tools. I want that toolbox. And so I made the decision while I was in graduate school that I was going to go work for a regional theater. And I often say, I said, I was going to go and steal the master's tools, right? I was going to learn what made the largest theaters in the country so successful, and then take that learning back to my small, scrappy theater.
I love it. And wait, was grad school also at Spelman, or were you at somewhere else at that point?
No. So I did my graduate work at the University of Houston. It was never about moving to the... It wasn't about moving to the bigger theater. That was never the goal. The goal was to go into the bigger theater and learn what they learned and bring it back to my theater. And Nasir Productions, which started in Atlanta, you know, a number of us kind of branched out, and there were folks who ended up going to Houston. And so we produced shows in Houston as well. So while I was in grad school, I was still producing for my scrappy theater company. And it so happened that in my graduate program, which I often call the choose your own adventure, it was this incredible program, but you kind of got as much out of it as you put yourself forward. So, I was mentored in playwriting by Edward Albee. I was mentored in directing by Sir Peter Hall. I wrote new musicals with Stuart Ostro, and it just is these incredible, truly historic figures in the field were my teachers. But in this program, one of the things is that you had to intern at a professional theater company for at least a semester before your degree would be conferred upon you. And what actually brought me back to Houston was that my mother had been diagnosed with cancer. So I moved back home to help take care of her, and kind of stumbled my way into graduate school there, which is another funny story, maybe for another day, or I can tell it now if you'd like.
Drop it in now. You know, let's go. Well, so I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry about that. But you said it. There's a story there.
Yeah.
So
no. You know, everything. I truly believe that the universe creates opportunities. You know, and that when you are aligned with purpose, you know, I had no idea that by moving back home, you know, I would actually be throwing open the doors to my career, right? I thought I was going to go to grad school in New York. But when my mother got sick, I made the decision to go back home to help take care of her and my family. And she was at MD Anderson, and that hospital was, you know, not far from the University of Houston. And so I would often find myself like going to museums and going through the art district. And I hadn't been in Houston in so many years. I decided, oh, well, I'll just stop by the university, because if you want to know the ecosystem, the artistic ecosystem of a city, you can go to a university and find out what theaters all the students want to work at or love the art on. And so I went into University of Houston one afternoon and dropped into the office to chat with some people. And I met with Dr. Sidney Berger, who is the chair of the department. And we were just chatting, and he said, you know, you'd be a really great student here. And I was like, oh, no. I'm going to go to NYU for grad school. And he was like, oh, okay. but we talked about that, the fact that I was a playwright. And he said, well, we have Edward Albee here. Oh yeah. I was like, I'd love to take his class. He's like, well, that's not how it works. So he said, the way that it works is that playwrights from all over the country submit plays to be considered for Edward's masterclass. And then he reads the plays and he decides, he chooses, you know, 5 to 8 writers that what Albee always say is he chose writers who made interesting mistakes. He said he chooses 5 to 8 writers, and then we give them notice and they come to Houston to be here for a semester and to work with him. And so I was like, well, I'd love to submit a play. And Dr. Berger says, oh, well, you know, the deadline was a few weeks ago. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'm not sure that I'm going to be here next year. And then he flips through one of those old school Rolodexes and he pulls out a card and he puts it on his desk. And he said, well, I can't promise that if you send a play to Edward, that you're going to make it in the class. But I do know that Edward opens every piece of mail that comes to his house. He said, so if I happen to walk out of this room and you happen to write down his address and you happen to mail in a play, you know, we'll at least let the universe decide. And he got up and walked out of the room. And I'm like scribbling down his address in New York and, wow. And went to it. I remember I went to like it was at the time called Kinko's, before it was FedEx Kinko's. We went to a Kinko's and immediately printed out my play and like sent it off that day with no idea what would happen. And about a month later, I got a beautiful letter from Mr. Albee welcoming me to his masterclass. And I ended up working with him for 2 years there.
Wow. Who's afraid of Hannah Sharif is what he was thinking. No more Virginia Woolf. Now you're off and running. All right.
Yeah. And so I would say that, you know, I found myself, you know, really in love with the opportunities and the environment and the students and the teachers that I worked with, the professors that I worked with. And while building Nasir Productions and also being able to really be there for my family. And so, you know, by the time it was time to do your internship, you know, my mother was in remission. Everybody was good. My father felt really, you know, great about, you know, me kind of going off and spreading my wings again. And so I made the decision that rather than taking an internship with a theater in Houston or in Texas, that I was going to go back east. And I had a whole long list of theaters on the East Coast that I really wanted to work with. And as I was leaving, Dr. Berger said to me, if you're going East, I really need you to take a meeting with a man named Michael Wilson. Michael was the artistic director at Hartford Stage, and he was the former associate artistic director at the Alley Theater, which is like a sister theater to Arena Stage in Houston that I grew up going to. And so he said, you know, Michael's a great friend. I know you've got your list of theaters, but you should really go talk to him. And so, I got in the car with my old college roommate who was starting grad school in New York, and we drove cross country on this massive adventure to like the rest of our lives.
Now, where are you? Is this Hartford, Connecticut?
Hartford, Connecticut, right. So I was going to New York to interview, and I did follow up and I called Michael Wilson and I asked if I could come in and interview. And they had this this fellowship that was funded at the time by the Lila Wallace Foundation. And it sounded like a great internship, right? It was paid, it was housing, all this stuff. And so I said, I'd love to come in and interview for that. And I came and I met with the associate artistic director at the time. His name was Christopher Baker. And it was supposed to be a 30-minute interview. And we spent 3.5 hours together. And I just really loved the conversation and the we had a similar passion for art and we had differing ideas. And it was a lot of like wrestling with ideas. And I just felt really alive in that moment. And I thought, oh, this is a place I want to work. And then I had an opportunity to meet with Michael and that went really well as well. So I scrapped my list of theaters I thought I wanted to intern with and immediately said, oh, I want this fellowship. And they were like, yeah, our funding just ran out. So you can have the job, but we don't have any money. Mm-hmm. And so then it was kind of a tricky moment of like, what are you going to do? And I decided that what I thought I could learn at that space was worth, you know, the sacrifice of having to take on other jobs in order to support myself during that what for me ended up being a year of internship in Hartford, where immediately I was serving as the literary manager at the company, and it was the youngest person in the artistic department, the kind of only woman as part of the curatorial team. And that year was groundbreaking and eye-opening. I did learn so much. I often say that Michael Wilson gave me one of the greatest gifts of my career because he made me the artistic liaison to every department, which meant that I was in every marketing meeting, every education meeting, every development meeting, every board meeting. And I really got this kind of intimate look at how large-scale regional theaters work. And that was what I was that's what I had intended to come in to learn. And I learned that many of the skill sets that I used in my small scrappy theater company made me a great producer and a great asset to Michael and the artistic team in Hartford. And I intended to be in Hartford for a year. My mom always says, we plan and God plans and God is the best of all planners, because I left after that year to graduate, and I got married. And the week I was leaving, they said, we've applied for a TCG New Generations Fellowship, which would pay for 2 years of salary and benefits for me. And they're like, if we get it, we really need you to come back. And by the end of the summer, I was back. And then I thought I'd be there for 2 years. And every time I thought my time was up, there was a new opportunity or promotion or responsibility that really was, again, helping me master my work as a producer. And so I ended up staying in Hartford 9.5 years.
Wow. I love throughout this journey that you're saying is, it's that whole, what is it? If you want to hear the universe laugh, just tell them your plans or whatever that line is. Like, it's, I'm stubbornly, no, I'm going to go to NYU, but then I love that you sort of are quick to get over that and just let the universe take you where it is. Cause you never, it's so true. You never know what the doors that are opening, even when you think they're not, you know what I mean? All right. So you've done nine or whatever years at Hartford. And then how do you get to St. Louis from there?
Yeah. So we went through an artistic director shift while I was in Hartford. I stayed on to support the new artistic director, Darko Tresnik, in his work. And then I, you know, at that point I was like, it's been a decade. I'd had a child, my oldest daughter. And I thought, you know, I've been on, when you're in the regional theater, when you start, it's a runaway train. It's exciting, but there's no time to kind of stop and be like self-evaluative. And I thought, okay, I've been chasing I've been on this road that I intended to be on for a year. And now it's, you know, 10 years later. And you know, are the dreams that I had for myself 10 years ago still my dreams? When am I going to give myself the opportunity to step back, to refocus on my writing, and to really make some intentional decisions about where I want to go with my career? And I'm so grateful that I actually kind of took that time. So my husband also at the time ended up taking a job with a consulting firm in Boston. So we moved from Hartford to Boston. I was in Boston 2 weeks and I told everyone foolishly at the TCG conference the week prior that I was moving to Boston, but I wasn't going to work for an institution. I was going to be a freelance artist and I was really going to focus on being a mom and it was going to be great. And at my second week in Boston, I got a call from a colleague who actually used to work here at Arena, David Dower, who was the associate artistic director at Arena under Molly many years ago. He was at Arts Emerson in Boston. And he called me, he said, a little birdie told me you're in town. And I said, yes. He said, a little birdie told me that you were not working for an institution. And I said, that is true. And so he offered me a job and I turned it down. And he's like, okay, well, just come to lunch. Let's have lunch. And I went to lunch and he had these other folks at lunch I hadn't met before. And we were just having a great conversation because I thought I was just having lunch with my friend and his friends. And at the end of the lunch, they were like, great, you got the job. And I was like, What job did I just find myself accepting? But so I worked for 2 years at Arts Emerson. I helped build a new artist residency program because a huge part of my career, both with Nasir Productions and then also as the director of new play development at Hartford Stage, was about supporting the new American artists and new American work. And I was, you know, I have always been passionate about as both a playwright, but also someone who believes that the canon of the work that we create, the best of the work that represents our culture, has to be supported and nourished by institutions who have the bandwidth to do so. And so part of what I when I went into the large regional theater, I was like, okay, I'm going to use all of the resources I have to support the artists and voices that are underrepresented and that are fundamentally telling the stories of our country, right? And that felt super subversive, I think, in the early days, but also exciting. And because that was the work that I'd done for, you know, at that point, about 15 years and had a reputation for it, it's why David wanted me to launch an artist residency program in Boston and also to run some research programs looking at barriers to inclusion. What is it that keeps certain audiences from being able to come into the theater? Because we were looking at all of this data that said that there was, you know, a kind of limited myopic group my words are not coming to me right now. Homogeneous group that comes to the theater. And so if we were looking at diversifying both in age and gender, in race and ethnicity, what were the barriers? And so I built a research program for looking at barriers to inclusion for the African-American community in Boston. And those were also really exciting years. And during that time, I also started freelance producing for small theater companies. So it was kind of a real 360 moment for me. When I went to Hartford, I intended to go for a year, learn what I could so I could come back to my small scrappy company. And then I found myself a decade later taking all of the things that I learned and then freelancing to help support the back offices of other small scrappy companies, right? And helping them strengthen their protosorial muscle, so to speak. And during that time, though, I had a lot of flexibility in that job, and I got really, really clear about what I wanted next. And I remember writing out a list of all the things I wanted to do in my next job, and also writing out that I wanted to, you know, that I wanted to become an artistic director of one of these major regional theaters. And it meant that I needed to go back into the regional, a kind of traditional regional theater. And as soon as I kind of got clear that that was the pathway, my phone started ringing, you know, without me even saying, hey, I'm ready to come back. I started getting job offers. And one of the folks who called me was Kwame Kwe-Arma, who at the time was the artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage. I had met him a few years earlier. He was a playwright from London who had been produced a lot, both in Baltimore and DC. And was really popular in the UK. And he'd come in and gotten this job as artistic director. And so kind of 2 years into his tenure, I got a call from a search firm saying that he had two positions that he was looking for. He was looking for an associate artistic director, and he was looking for someone who would be the director of a thing at the time called the Fourth Space, which was this nexus point between art and technology and digital theater. When they sent me the two job descriptions, and if you read the two job descriptions, it was like reading both sides of the paper where I'd written down all the things that I wanted to do in the American theater. And the Fourth Space was something that really just didn't even exist, right? As I was writing it, I was like, you're never going to find this job. And so I remember calling Kwame and saying, okay, I'm going to come. I want to work for you, but I don't want one of the jobs. I want both of them. I want you to combine these two jobs together.
Put them together.
And I want to do it. And it was really exciting. Those 5 years in Baltimore, we piloted really interesting guerrilla street theater, site-specific theater, digital theater, hybrid theater between live and digital. It was just really, really exciting on that front. And in addition to it, I was the primary producer for the company. And so after 5 years at Baltimore Center Stage, there was a major kind of generational transition happening across the field where there were a number of legacy artistic directors who were retiring. And so, you know, those of us in my generation who had been working in the regional theater for quite some time started to get calls. And I was really selective about the theaters that I was interested in running. I wanted to make sure that there would be spaces and communities where I could continue the work that I was really committed to. And some of what I learned about really creating meaningful partnership and collaboration and connection between the major theater in a city and all of the communities that it serves, not just our dedicated core audience, but actually building out and piloting programs that would help us have a real place of relevancy in multiple communities. And so I really was looking for theaters in communities where I could continue that work. And St. Louis actually had very similar demographics to Baltimore. And St. Louis also had very similar challenges as a city. And I thought that I could continue that work and that I could have a meaningful impact through the regional theater on the city of St. Louis. And so that's why I really kind of went full throttle at wanting to become artistic director there. And I will say it was one of the great honors of my life to serve as artistic director in my 5 years in St. Louis. And in fact, I'd gotten calls over and over and over again in the last couple of years, and I really wasn't interested or looking for another artistic directorship. But when I got the call about Arena, there was no way that I could not throw my hat in the ring. One, I will say that Molly is truly a visionary leader. For the last 25 years, she's been at the forefront of the field. And as a woman coming up in the field, she has been really an inspiration for myself and for so many other artistic directors, female artistic directors, women artistic directors. And Zelda Fishhandler, of course, is one of the mothers of the regional theater movement. And again, the 19-year-old who fell in love with theater and knew that this was the career that I was meant to have, had written down that one day this was the theater that I was going to run. And, you know, over the course of my career, we had opportunities to co-produce with Arena at Hartford and Baltimore. So many people that I really love and have been bonded through the years with through art came up through Arena. I knew the quality of the work that happened here. And the idea of being able to take all that I've learned over the last, you know, 20 to 25 years of my career and leverage that in a meaningful way for a theater that is so important to not just DC, but to our country, and to follow and build upon the foundation of Zelda and of Douglas and of Molly, it felt like the universe was calling. It felt there for me, there was something almost spiritual about the opportunity. And I knew that I would regret letting that opportunity pass. And so I didn't. And every step of the way, I have fallen more in love with the city and with this company. I'm at the top of my second week full-time on the job, but I've had the last 4 months to start to build relationships and get to know this extraordinary team of artists and artisans and administrators here. It truly is, you know, a reflection of the best of what the field has to offer. And I wrote Molly in my first week to just say thank you for what you've built and for the foundation that I am so fortunate to be able to continue to build upon.
Oh, yeah, it is an amazing legacy. Like, I mean, That's what folks need to realize. You know, they're if they're living in DC or maybe they're new to here and they're like, oh, I've heard of Arena Stage, but you need to realize that folks like yourself who are coming from out of other towns, other parts of the country are literally writing down one day, I hope to make it to Arena. Like it is a bastion. Seriously, it is a bastion for theater and original theater. You know, and not a knock on any of the other theaters in town that get the big, you know, national tours of the big Broadway shows, whatever. That's all great. There's a place for all of it, of course. We want to see. We love when Rent comes to town or whatever. But like, for a place like Arena to stage original works, you know, where your Dear Evan Hansen's are being created before they go up and dominate Broadway. You
that's
know,
right.
Like, I always cite that because that's the famous one. But even the ones that you know maybe aren't as famous, but just the original works, month after month after month that Arena cranks out, it is like it provokes your mind and changes hearts and minds constantly. I remember talking with Andre DeShields when he came and did King Hedley II there. You know, the guy who played the Wiz, of course. And Hadestown and all that, but like, yeah, and he was at Arena and he was talking about, you know, that the root word of entertainment and sort of the ideas to hold and to change us, and that is what Arena does with every show. So all that rant, that big rant aside, what are some of the shows coming up that I know we have POTUS? Tease some of the slate coming up.
Yes.
That will hold and change us and change hearts and minds.
I will say that the next show up is POTUS. It is a hysterical farce. It is the kind of work that I think we all need. It's smart, incredibly funny. I think coming off the last 3 years, everyone in this country needs a moment to be able to laugh and escape and also catch those cautionary tales that the story has for us. But I just think that it's going to be a ruckus good time for folks. POTUS is a story of a president a bit bumbling and hellbent on destroying his political legacy, and the seven women fighting like hell to keep him from completely upturning his legacy and the country. It is a good old farce in all the best ways, with slamming doors and as I said, a ruckus good time. We also have Swept Away coming up, which is a gorgeous musical not to be missed. It is one that I think people will talk about for years to come. Deeply romantic, a great drama, beautiful music. And then also Unknown Soldier, which is a show that is the last piece of Michael Friedman, who's a great composer of the American theater that we lost far too soon. His colleagues were committed to continuing to make sure that final kind of masterpiece made it to the stage. And Arena is so excited to be part of the continued development of that piece. I think it's a gorgeous, gorgeous musical that really is a reflection of what it means to be American and across the decades. And so I'm excited about all of those pieces. And of course, we have our collaboration and partnership with Step Africa. We're bringing back the holiday Step show, and in the spring at closing out our season with Migration, which is one of their most iconic and gorgeous pieces, one that I'm so excited to be able to bear witness to. So we have a wide range of exciting, funny, deeply moving work I'm happening on this stage this year, and I'm excited to meet all of you. I welcome everyone to the theater.
Oh, it sounds like a great lineup. And yeah, we might hit you up again in the next couple weeks to, you know, preview, you know, a specific show or two. I'll bounce them off my ball. In the meantime, thanks for the overview. And I'll run this interview as like a feature piece. If you want to speak really quick, you mentioned earlier, but you are the first Black artistic director at Arena Stage. You know, how proud of you over that glass ceiling shattered?
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's bittersweet, right? Because every time I break through a ceiling, I recognize that I come as one, but I stand as 10,000. I understand that I am only here because of all the Black women before me that pushed those doors and pushed against the ceiling. And I also understand that I'm here to hold space for the next generation too. So it is exciting and wonderful and humbling, but I also understand that it's not for me, right? That it is an honor and a responsibility to be the body, the vessel that is carrying the hopes and dreams of all those who paved the way for me and all those coming behind me.
Perfectly said. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And yes, bravo to Motley Smith before you, and of course, Zelda Fitchandler yes. before that. But we're excited to see, you know, where you take this thing. So congrats on the appointment, and good luck with the season.
Thank you so much, Jason. It's wonderful to meet you. Thank you.